Welcome to UK Healthcast, a podcast presented by UK Healthcare. I'm Scott Webb, and today we're discussing the latest in radiation oncology with Dr. Weesey Yan. He's a radiation oncologist and associate professor of radiation medicine with UK Healthcare. Doctor, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Scott. It's an honor to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. You look the part. You look like a doctor. You look like a radiation oncologist, and that's always a good thing for viewers especially. I want to have you start by just telling us about yourself, your journey to UK Healthcare, what led you into medicine, why radiation oncology, all those good things.
So what brought me to UK is very interesting. So initially, I went to Corbin in Kentucky. And then there's one day in the town of London, I was like, how come I'm in Kentucky myself? Because one of my friends invited me down here. And, you know, in rural Kentucky, it can be a little bit rough. So because my wife got pregnant, she wants to stay in Lexington. And then naturally, I came to UK. So that's a sweet surprise. And as far as why I became a physician, I'm more interested in finance, economics, and trades. I want to be in Wall Street. But as you probably know, that since my great-grandpa, we were a family of four generations of physicians from private practice, lab medicine, my dad to write down. So for me, it's pretty much like fixed by the Asian families, right? You just have to be a physician. The road is paved that way. Why radiation medicine is that when I was in graduate school, my neighbor is trying to get into radiation oncology. Before, I know nothing about radiation oncology. My father is a medical oncologist, and my PhD is in pharmacology. Naturally, you would use drugs. But when he is into radiation medicine, I started to explore a little bit. It seems to be more surgical related. It has more anatomy, graphics, computer. Looking back 10 years down the road, I think it's much better to be a radiation oncologist. I mean, my dog is great, but for me, it could be boring. I don't want to stand there and run for 3 hours. I'd rather just like in front of a computer and do what we call contouring. And we have a word for it that's called painting, right? So the anatomy, physics, biology, and especially the immune therapy this year, so I think this is a great field. And it's in the beginning, it's really rough, but now I'm enjoying my career.
Yeah, you mentioned immunotherapy there. I know that's one of the latest, coolest things. And I think, you know, I say radiation oncology and most of us sort of nod our heads like we know what that means. But I want to have you talk about some of the cancers that you treat most often. What is radiation therapy typically? Like, why is it particularly effective with one cancer versus another? And just generally speaking, what are the cancers that you see most often that you treat most often?
I personally see and treat most often is the head and neck, lung, and metastatic cancers, which I do radiosurgery, and the gynecologic cancers, I do brachytherapy. So for lots of people, even in the medical field, they know very few about the radiation. They think we're just hiding in the bunkers, and it's really hard for people outside, even in the medical specialties, to understand what radiation is about. But briefly, in the old school radiation, you kill the cancer cells by bombarding their DNA. So the cancer cells, when they're dividing really fast, they have issues repairing themselves when you damage their DNA by the radiation, just like nuclear bombs. But now we know more and more because radiation at a high dose, where when we do radiosurgery, it can kill the cancers by blasting the cells in their vasculature, right? And you take away the nutrition from them. And also there are more and more things that we find out they can kill by apoptosis, by the death signals, by recruiting T cells to attack the cancer, just like immunotherapy, which is, of course, it's a small field, but we definitely have a lot to do with the immune system. So combined together, that make radiation sometimes as effective as surgery, as a local therapy. For example, for prostate, for early stage lung cancers, these can be cured by radiation, especially for GYN cases, like if you have, say, advanced stage cervical cancers, you cannot treat by surgery alone. And then the tumor becomes so extensive, you need external and internal radiation, and that works really well at the same time. So radiation can be fairly useful as a local therapy. The reason why some tumors don't work is that most of the times we cannot give enough radiation dose. For example, if the tumor is next door to your guts, you have to reduce radiation dose, and then that makes it less effective. But if you have a tumor in the body that we can safely deliver enough radiation, we can ablate 80, 90% of the solid tumors. It's a really cool tool. And if you study really carefully, and this year, we have more and more combination therapy with immunotherapy and possibly cell therapy, it can work in the whole human body. But although that part is understudied, it's being explored.
Yeah, studies are ongoing, and just brought a smile to my face when I hear the word cure. associated and connected with cancer, of course. We all want that. And I know that's what you and all the experts at UK Healthcare are working towards. And doctor, I like to bust myths when I can. I want to do a little myth busting because I know we hear the word radiation and we get scared, of course. So what are some of the biggest myths that you encounter from patients about radiation therapy? And how do you bust those myths? How do you demystify them?
The majority of patients, they know very little about it. So majority of them will say, hey, I'll listen whatever you say, doc. The other part of the spectrum got really scared because of the nuclear bomb, right? You can just like kind of shine in the night, or I can become Ninja Turtles, all the things, because they don't know much. But for the layman, I think the key thing for toxicity is, yes, in the long term, there are some chronic late damages. For example, for young patients, you have a higher chance of getting second cancer down the road. And we do have damage to the heart or to the immune cells in the body. And sometimes when you radiate in the pelvis, you do have an increased chance of fracture. Yes. So it's damaging to the cancer, also can be damaging to the body. But if we define the toxicity and the consequences for you, you will take educated guess. So it's more of a balance of risk versus return, right? And for majority of people, the biggest risk, there are two things. One is you're going to get a cancer down the road, 10 to 20 years, although the chance is low, less than 10, 15%. But yes, the danger is real. The other one, especially for thoracic radiation, is that we kill the cancer at the same time. Your immune cells can be really fragile. So we may be doing collateral damage that make your immune system even weakened, right? And when you have immunotherapy, you're probably going to have more distant metastatic disease because you kill too many of your lymphocytes. So these things are real. But again, these can be educated. You can have a educated guess before you take, say, radiation. But number one, you are not radioactive most of the times. So number two, you don't shine in the dark. Number three, we cannot make you have the mutants and pass to your children. That doesn't work like that. So majority of the places is okay. It's not 100% great, but it's not as bad as you think.
I see what you mean. Most of us, when we're in the hands of the care of an expert, we say, whatever you say, doc, that sounds good. But good to know that we're not going to glow in the dark, because I want to talk to you about some of the innovations and what's going on, the latest, greatest things, recent changes in radiation oncology that are significantly impacting patient care. So take us through that as best you can in podcast form. Like, what are you excited about?
The field has a major advancement about 20 years ago when Dr. McGarry, who's here in UK, and then another one in University of Indiana, so Timmerman, they invented SBRT. So they use high-dose radiation as a surgical tool to ablate the lung tumors. Now it's used for pancreatic, prostate, so that we change radiation from an adjuvant tool to a curing tool like surgery. That's 20 years ago. But these days, there are two major advancements. One is the hardware, like protons, flash therapy, better machines that's more precise. Give you more radiation, less radiation to the normal tissue, faster treatment, it's better user experience. The other part is developing is the software. When people know more about the radiation and it gives you a combination of how to protect your immune system, at the same time, prime your tumor to let your whole body fight together with the drugs for the tumor. So we have updates from the hardware and software interface. So there are improvements and we are learning more and more. And for at least especially for lung, we are knowing more. So we are actually in this institution trying to improve heart toxicity and spare your immune system so that our patient, theoretically, if we do the same radiation, our patient should live longer.
I see what you mean. Yeah, there's just so much room for optimism in speaking with experts from UK Healthcare and speaking with you today. I feel like I want to smile a lot because this all sounds like good stuff, cool stuff, amazing technology. As you say, software, hardware. I want to get a sense from you, doctor, when we think about the UK Markey Cancer Center, how do you help prepare patients for radiation therapy and the after effects of treatment?
The good part is this is an intellectual environment. We have tumor boards, we have medical oncologists, surgeons, pulmonologists, radiation oncologists, lots of decisions are made in the group manner. And also, it's much better to have specialists. When I was in Corbin, I'm the only radonc in town. And our tumor board, we don't have so many physicians. In the end, there's no dynamic environment to give you an intellectual environment for you to improve and think. Here, you know, you have people operating all the time. So you have the influx and efflux of ideas. And even in our department, sometimes I take a look at the other people's blood. That gave you some inspirations. Actually, the relationship between the heart immune system is that developed here at the UK because of the intellectual environment. So when you have specialists dealing with lung cancer all the time, it's much better than a general practitioner who sees everything. So like you go to a steak restaurant for a steak versus a fast food for a steak, that's different. So I think it's the environment, also the expertise that can definitely give you better quality of care.
Yeah, patients are in great hands, families are in great hands, experts, of course. I know we're going to speak again in the near future, but in the short term here, let's finish up. Let's talk about the importance of prevention, early detection, and what role radiation oncology plays when we do catch cancers early versus later stage cancers. And like, what should we know? What should potential patients know about screening, risk reduction, lifestyle changes that we can make to reduce our likelihood of needing, let's say, those more aggressive treatments?
For example, we can cure early stage. It's really hard for us to cure advanced stage. For stage four, so we can extend your life, but we cannot cure it. The bad thing is you never get to see us, right? Not seeing us is best blessing. So we try to prevent. You can do low-dose CT lung screening, which can find nodules from really early. You start monitoring that, and if that's real, you try to ablate them, and then that's like 90% of cure. And also in your real life, you know, smoking is a big thing here. Probably everybody smokes. When you tell them, it's like, oh, I'm going to quit, they won't. The problem is if you keep on smoking, doesn't matter what we do, it's going to kill you. We can slow down a little bit, but it's ultimately your body. The other thing is very interesting is readout here. I got a patient, the whole family got lung cancer, one after the other. So they told me that after the second case, they started to go to the basement, do the radon reading, and then their reading was really high. So living exposed to that thing for a low-dose radon radiation for 20, 30 years, that's something you can do definitely to help yourself. If your air is dirty, if you're cooking a lot, get the air purifier. For the housewives who don't smoke, if you're exposed to the fumes, the small droplets of cooking oil, you can get lung cancer as well. So it's not only for smokers. So this kind of lifestyles, screening, get your environment right, can go a long, long way to prevent this from happening. So you rather do it before and you don't want to see us. When we see, like there's a Chinese saying that the best doctor cure the disease before they start.
That's perfect. Well said by an expert, of course. I know we're going to speak again in the future, but appreciate your time today. I love the room for optimism. There's things, of course, that we can do. We busted some myths today, all good stuff. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Scott. Great pleasure.
And for more information, go to ukhealthcare.com/Markey. And if you enjoyed this podcast, please share on your social channels. And don't forget to check out our entire podcast library for other topics of interest. This is UK Healthcast, a podcast from UK Healthcare. Thanks for listening.